Welcome to Pretend I Know Nothing About. I'm Katie White, your host, administrator of COAAA. On today's episode, we are learning about the assessment team from Tim Duggan and Anya Moore Ridley. Our assessment team is made up of a number of talented individuals that ensure that those in the community meet level of care and Medicaid requirements in order to receive their home and community-based services in their home or in assisted living. Part of our assessment team are passport assessors, assisted living waiver assessors, and MyCare assessors for the Aetna and Molina teams. Let's get into it. Welcome, Tim and Anya, to the podcast. So excited to have you both on today to talk about all things assessment. I'd like to kick us off with Tim. Can you share your name and your role here?
Yeah, thank you. My name's Timothy Duggan, or Tim Duggan. And my role here is I'm clinical manager of the assessment and enrollment team. And the assessment has two elements. It has the passport assisted living waiver side, and then it also has the MyCare team as well.
Okay. And about how big are both of those teams?
The MyCare team, we have about 35 on the entire team. The MyCare team consists of 10, and then obviously assisted living and passport would make up the rest.
Okay, great. Well, welcome. Hey. And how about you, Anya?
Yeah, I'm Anya. Hey. So I am primarily just an assessor for passport.
Okay.
But, you know, we do other type of assessments too, and we'll probably get into that later.
Great. And so one of the other things that I think is fun is just to give a little background on what you did before here, or if this is your first job. And so just tell us a little bit about your path, Tim.
My path. Very enjoyable, blessed path. So I've had many decent experiences. I don't know how far back I can go because I'm a little bit on the older side, but I'll join when I moved to Ohio. I was connected immediately to social services. And prior to that, I worked within churches and worked with people. So I've always been interested in helping people. And then with the transition here, found the opportunity in social work and saw that it as well scratched the itch of that I have, I guess, somewhere in my heart, just to help people, to advocate, to support and come beside. For the first part of my journey in social work, it was working with youth and helping on a clinical level in the community. Enjoyed it, had some great opportunities, found some opportunities to move up into the leadership there. And then I took a short stint away from social work, had an enjoyable opportunity, but it did not scratch the right itch. So I eventually worked myself back here. And in 2014, I found myself at COAAA.
Great.
It was right on the, I guess it was the dawn of MyCare, so I was right at the front. The world was moving pretty fast at the agency, but I was fairly ignorant, so I didn't know what. I just kept saying yes whenever they asked me to do something. And lo and behold, I said yes to the right things and was able to move into a supervisor role on the MyCare team, which I stayed there for most of my tenure here at COAAA until just under a year ago. I moved over to the position that I am now as the clinical manager.
So great. So you've had a great career here. You came in 2014, which is a year that a lot of people, it's kind of like a before and after my care, depending on who
yes.
you talk to around here. So glad that you came on and that you've worked your way up. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Anya, how about you?
Let's see. So I'm not considered a baby social worker anymore. but I'm also not considered a tenured social worker anymore. So I'm right in the middle now. So I actually started off in business school first. And then I changed my major after I went to a conference. Now, I went to a historically black university in Florida, and I was in one of my classes and they said, "Hey guys, do you guys want to go to New Orleans?" I said, yeah, sure. But what I didn't know, I'm just a young college student. I didn't know that I was going to meet social workers who are all about environmental justice and climate change. And that's how I changed my major to social work. And then I really got a, I fell in love with older adults. And so most of my experiences with older adults, I had time working in activities departments at assisted livings. I was with AmeriCorps with the villages. And then I got to see OAAA. And then a little bit those social work years, I was in mental health and substance abuse too. So I was an individual and group therapist. I didn't like that part of social work. I was good at it, but I didn't like it. I said, I need to go back to older adults. And so then that's how I found my way back to older adults, with coming in to see OAAA and being a part of the assessment department. And I will be a assessor for 2 years in a few weeks.
That's great. So yeah. Were you with the local village network as an AmeriCorps assessor? I didn't know that. Which village?
Ville on the Hill. So I was on the Hilltop area.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Yeah. So then did we cross paths when you were there, or was I already
I think you still were in the village network.
Okay.
And that's when Christine Happel was still with CRC.
Yes.
And I think I was Ville on the Hill's first VISTA that they had.
Okay.
And I don't really know what's happened since then. But right. Yeah.
That's great. All roads lead to COAAA at some point, I
pretty
feel like
much.
Especially if you have a love for older adults.
Yeah.
You really can't avoid this place in a great way, if you're looking out for older adults and people with disabilities. So mm-hmm. Great. This one of my favorite parts of every podcast, because I feel like I learn things about people that I never knew. So we are going to start with just kind of an overview of the assessment and enrollment department. So, Tim, I'm going to pose that question to you.
Just an overview. We probably can be seen as the first face seen within the agency. As the assessors, they go out to determine the level of care, to see if they actually qualify for the Passport Assisted Living waiver, and additionally the MyCare waiver through because of the level of care. The consumers enter the agency through the screening team, but that's usually over the phone, just getting background information to determine first steps. And then so then we go out and we meet the consumers in the home, try to determine, again, if they qualify based upon their activities of daily living. Get to know them, give a fresh face to the agency, and also to provide resources if there's some additional supports needed that way. So we really are the first face that they get to see. We do approximately 60 assessments. We're assigned about 60 assessments a week, some of which come to fruition, some of which do not. We just aren't able to meet with the consumers. But that's about how many assignments we get on average every single week on the Passport Assisted Living waiver side. On the MyCare side, they muscle out a lot more assessments, but they're not necessarily the first face for the services, since the MyCare entities have already seen them. So they're just out there doing the immediate assessment to determine level of care. So they do approximately 170 assessments a week. They have to do approximately 4 a day is our goal, and we're pretty close. We're not quite hitting home runs yet, but we're getting pretty close with that one. So I give kudos to the soups in that domain.
So that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us, that's a lot of people that are coming in each week. Tell us how they get to us. How does somebody get referred to have an assessment at COAAA?
Great question. They come through different resources. ODA and ODM provides referrals that make it to us.
Okay.
The MyCare team often gets the referrals. If they're already on MyCare but they're not on waiver, then they may come to us straight from the plan itself.
Okay.
So we may get some that way as well. So these are there's just multiple ways that they do make it to us, and the screening department does a wonderful job before they get to us to sort of ferret out which one of the three branches they'll fall into as far as the assessment team is concerned.
Okay. And then one final question for you, and then we're going to go to Anya. But can you explain what the level of care means and kind of what they're looking for and what qualifies you or disqualifies you?
Yeah, absolutely. I probably could defer to Anya as well to this, since she actually lives it and breathes it. But the level of care determines if they meet nurse and facility level of care. And in order to do that, there's a few requirements, but a large part leans back on their activities of daily living. Do they need additional support, hands-on assistance with activities of daily living? And some examples of activities of daily living are things like bathing, feeding, also transfers. So these are just some of the examples of different activities of daily living. There's some additional elements that fall behind that to determine if they actually qualify as well. But we're really out there scoping the activities of daily living.
Okay.
And the next step from there is, in order to be qualified for waiver, then they would also have to meet the financial side of it as well, which is we can educate them on, but that is determined externally by Jobs and Family Services. We just can help educate them a little bit on what to expect in that process.
Okay. And the whole meaning behind the word waiver is, instead of going into a nursing facility, if someone still meets that level of care and financial need, the waiver is that they can receive those services in their home instead.
Yep.
Okay. Correct. Okay.
Yeah. That is correct.
So now we know what we're looking for, if you will. Anya, walk us through when you get an assessment scheduled, how do you call, you know, where are you driving? What does it look like when you arrive? Just kind of talk us through the entire assessment process, if you will.
Yeah. So like Tim was saying about, you said 60 assignments a week. So those are split, you know, of course I couldn't get 60 assignments in 1 week, but they're split. So you could maybe have 1 to 4 assignments on a daily basis. And so you'll see your name on the list. You put them on however you organize your assignments. So you give them a call. So either it is the consumer themselves, or it's usually a family member that you get things set up with. And the first thing is, do you have any questions about passport? That is the first question, because a lot of the times we are getting the referrals from multiple sources in the community. Sometimes they don't understand level of care criteria. They don't understand the Medicaid criteria. And so that's the first question, to see what is their gauge of what they're actually applying for. And then if everything checks out, we get them scheduled. And so I used to cover 3 counties, so Franklin, Delaware, and Union. One of the newer assessors, thank God, she helped me out. She's covering Delaware now, so now I'm just Franklin and Union.
Okay.
We don't get that much from Union. Maybe I go out to Marysville, that type of Union County area, maybe once a month, okay, if that. But then it's just primarily Franklin. So you want to confirm their address on the phone, because sometimes they move, sometimes, it could be a lot of things. So you want to make sure you're going to the right address. You go out there, knock on the door, ring the doorbell. You make sure you bring your chair.
Okay.
Everyone has their COAAA chair in case management or assessment.
And why is that?
You never know. You never know if they're sitting room. You never know if they're going to be in a hospital bed. That is one of the main things, is you don't want to have the consumers move into a room. You need to really meet them where they are in their house.
Okay.
But also, we're going into unknown environments, so it could be pests, you know, roaches, bed bugs. Sometimes there could be mice. You really don't know. So you want to bring in your own equipment. I hang my bag on my chair and we just go through the assessment. And like Tim was saying, the primary focus is on the ADL. So we always say, like, the big three is bathing, dressing, and toileting. They have to, usually to get on our program, they have to meet at least 2 of those.
That, like, they need assistance with least 2?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hands-on assistance with at least 2 of those. And that's how we know it's a nursing facility level of care, is is there some physical conditions or even cognitive conditions like Alzheimer's or dementia, where they're just to a point where they don't even know how, you know, to wash their bodies anymore, how to put on the shirt the right way, or, you know, things like that. And so we really look into those details of the ADLs. And then if they meet criteria, We sign the enrollment paperwork. We do the documentation afterwards. And then for passport, we pass it on to our enrollment team and they help us out with that. Assisted living in MyCare is a little different with that enrollment process. But yeah, that's usually what it looks like.
That is such, I like feel like I'm right there with you on one of your assessment visits. So one question I have for you is regarding actually assessing the need for assistance. Are you just asking that? Are you asking them to show you?
Yeah. So I always like, back when I was in activities at assisted living, so I did the sit-or-size activities.
Yeah.
And so I actually do that in my assessments too.
Okay.
And I ask for their range of motion. And so I'm like, are you able to put your hands above your head? Are you able to give yourself a hug? Are you able to touch your toes? If they can do that, they usually are able to wash themselves using a shower chair. They're able to put on their shoes and put on their jackets okay by themselves. And this one's a little bit more personal. But if they're able to touch their toes, that usually means that they're able to wipe their behind too when
sure.
using the toilet. So that's usually what I ask them. And then sometimes I ask them to walk me to their bathroom. And they can show me how they transfer into their tub or their walk-in shower too. But that's usually the gist. People are sometimes very straightforward if they need assistance with their ADLs or not. Sometimes you kind of have to like pry it out of them and be a little bit more detailed with the questions or with the tasks that you're asking them. So yeah, that's pretty much.
That's a really interesting approach. And I love that you're bringing in the sitter size experience from being an activities assistant. When you are trained on doing assessments or when you train others, is that pretty common the way that the questions are being phrased and that sort of thing? Okay.
Yeah. So when I was being trained, I was actually trained by nurses for the most part. And they do it a little differently. They know how to ask more of the medical questions to see a nursing facility level of care rather than a social worker.
Okay.
They could just look at a medication bottle and be like, yeah, we can enroll them. Or, you know, or if someone's just on one medication, like an inhaler, just one inhaler, then they're like, no, you don't meet criteria. Here's some other resources. But from a social worker's perspective, we really have to dig more into what we're observing and not so much the medical conditions. And that's usually how I teach the newer assessors, like ask them to walk you, you know, walk you to their bathroom or ask them to show their range of motion or are they able to walk across the room okay with their rollator walker or cane? Because that's still considered independent if they're using DME, so like their
okay.
walker or cane. And so that wouldn't be counted as hands-on. So yeah, I think you just kind of have to be a little detail-oriented when it comes to the ADLs with them. So, I mean, it really just depends on the week. And that's one of the challenges is because we receive so many referrals from so many different sources, it could be a neighbor calling in, it could be ODM, and they're just looking that this is an older adult that applied for Medicaid, and they'll just send it to us. A lot of people don't meet our criteria, to be honest with you, and most of the time it's because of Medicaid criteria. It's usually assets that are involved where they don't meet the financial eligibility. And then a level of care comes into play where they're still independent with all of their ADLs, but they need help with their laundry. But that, you know, that doesn't count for passport. That's not a nursing facility level of care. So then we usually try to get them connected with senior options. I always say that, like, if you're not with a waiver program or passport, please get with your levy program.
Okay.
So that's usually what happens.
Okay, great. And so senior options is Franklin County, which makes sense.
Right.
Because you're in Franklin County.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. So Tim, Anya mentioned nurses as well. So your team is made up of nurses and social workers. Is that right? Any other disciplines?
Yeah, that as far as the assessors go, it is going to be a licensed individual of nurses or social workers. We do have some additional support people that do not need licenses but may have individual expertise. For example, our Medicaid specialists, they are the magic behind the scenes so often and are able to take a look at the systems and just sort of navigate the macro systems to help us get people enrolled.
Okay.
We have the enrollment team as well, which they are the ones who help after the assessment is completed, assure that we get everything necessary, the doctor's letters and things like that. So they help out from an in-office perspective of just sort of following up with calls and doing a little bit of the non-clinical side of it.
Okay. So Anya comes back with a completed assessment. It goes to the enrollment team. And you mentioned a doctor's letter. What else are some of those requirements? And does that include Medicaid as well, making sure that they qualify?
That is, yeah, that's absolutely part of it. And this is on the passport side. The assisted living waiver has a little bit more of a different type of transition.
Okay.
In the MyCare, since they already have care managers at the different MCOs, they manage that part.
Okay.
But on the passport side, after the assessment, the enrollment team holds on to it, helps with identifying potential services where needed, waiting on the doctor's letter. It used to be a piece that we're trying to figure out the best way and most efficient way to get. And then also waiting on Jobs and Family Services to assure that the financial elements are in place.
Okay, so then the enrollment team includes individuals getting the doctor's letter and different forms, getting all of that information then to our Medicaid specialists who are processing that through the County Job and Family Services to see if they're qualified for Medicaid. Is that right?
It's not a simple stream where it goes from one to the other. The Medicaid specialist and the enrollment team are in union trying to accomplish the tasks. So they'll feed back and forth information at the same time. And a little bit depends on what comes first. Either the JFS gets approved and now we're waiting. I mean, their financial part gets approved. And now we're waiting on the doctor's letter, or we get the doctor's letter, and now we're trying to push JFS to move the financials through. So they're both in sharing the same timeline.
Okay. And it's really kind of a complicated, not kind of, it's a complicated web of some doctor's offices want you to fax things. Did they get the fax? Did they not? Is our fax machine on analog and theirs is on digital and that might not work? And so there's all these different pieces and parts and variables that go into just one person's potential enrollment into Passport, which I believe is why the enrollment team was created maybe only a year and a half, 2 years ago, right? To really be able to specialize and kind of streamline some of that?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. The enrollment team is a new entity, and it's been functioning for about a year.
Okay.
About a year, actually. Wow. And so they're trying to get their legs underneath them. We were trying to hire up. We lost a few, then we got them back. And right now they're actually plugging along at a really good clip.
Great.
But their intent is to free up the assessors to focus on the level of care. And then the behind the scenes, non-clinical, following up with doctors and all that stuff, they try to take off of the assessors and just sort of see them through to the finish line.
Okay.
Sort of like a relay race, I
guess.
It
is like a relay race.
Yeah.
Except it's like with obstacles or something. It's like an obstacle course relay race.
Hurdles, yes. It's a relay hurdle race.
Yeah. The enrollment team made all the difference. So I was here before the enrollment team, and that was a lot.
Yeah.
You just basically just had to... You did everything that the enrollment team did now, along with your assessments.
Oh, wow.
And so that was amazing.
Okay. You would have been the person trying to get the doctor's order and trying to, wow. Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
Now I can see really why that must be so helpful.
Yeah.
Especially to be able to just really specialize in one of the two areas, either the assessment or the enrollment piece, and not being constantly pulled in all these different directions.
Yeah. There was still two individuals that one moved to a different department. I think the other one actually went to like American Red Cross or something, but it was two individuals before the enrollment team where they found the services for the consumer, but us as assessors, we still send the doctor's letter, but we don't have to keep up with them anymore. As soon as we send them, the enrollment team just helps us out with that.
Okay.
So they're really great. And also with the Medicaid approval and the monthly contacts, the assessors were doing that. We had to reach back out to the families like, hey, did you send in your mother's Social Security award letter? Like, did you do these things? And now the enrollment team is doing that. So it's just been wonderful.
I can't imagine how everyone was doing it before the enrollment team, just knowing how much you're out in the community. But then all of those things need to be done here. And if you miss a call or a fax or, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what a brilliant idea that those that put together the enrollment team had. And lucky for us, we've got great members on there.
Yeah.
I walk that hallway by their office quite a bit, and I just hear them on the phones all day. And they're just so kind and so patient. And yeah, it's a good group. So I always like to hear a little bit about someone's typical day or week. So Anya, do you want to start? What's your typical day or a typical week like for you?
So I do my assessments Monday through Thursday. Friday is usually my documentation day. You usually, with a passport, our assessments are a bit more comprehensive. We have to gather a lot more information. Same thing with assisted living. So you're usually doing two a day. Some assessors do three in one day. I cannot. I can't do that. But they give themselves either two documentation days or one and a half documentation days. So I think that's the really great part of assessment. You really have a lot of autonomy with your schedule and, you know, hybrid work model and things like that. And you schedule your own assessments. And so with that, I try to schedule my assessments in the morning, and then I'm traveling throughout my afternoon. So between 10 a.m. and 1 p.m., I'm out in the community, and that's Monday through Thursday. And then after 1, I have a strong boundary with myself. I'm not on the phone unless it's something very important or it's like a consumer's family that I haven't been in contact with and trying to get them scheduled after, you know, two or three times. But that's my documentation time, and that's how I kind of stay on top of my work. And then Fridays are primarily when I'm reaching out to pending consumers with assisted living, or I'm getting through a lot more people to schedule for the upcoming weeks, things like that. And that's typically what it looks like. You're traveling between 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Monday through Thursday. You're, you know, the morning hours are pretty much either you're scheduling people or you're getting ready for your day.
Okay.
And then at the end of the day, you're working on your documentation. So putting in your case notes, sending those doctor's letters, sending the Medicaid applications to the Medicaid specialist that we have. And that's pretty much what it looks like for the most part.
And is documentation done on paper or in a computer system?
So all in our PIMS system.
So a computer system,
yeah.
not paper.
Okay. Yeah.
So you're taking notes throughout, because at this point you've probably got it pretty well memorized, and then you go home and you document it in the computer.
Yeah. So at the assessment too, you're documenting on the PIMS, so you can download your consumer's charts while you're out in the community.
Okay.
And so you want to get as much information into PIMS while you're in the consumer's home. So then by the time that you're back at home or back in the office, you're kind of just cleaning things up.
Okay.
And just finalizing your case notes and sending in the rest of the documentation.
Okay. Because it is so comprehensive, you want to get as much done when you're in the home. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. And Tim, how about you? What's your typical day or week like?
Typical day or week. I'm still learning, so I need to be candid about that. Emails and meetings, I think, is a large chunk of my onboarding piece. But I would say a huge part of my tasks is really seeing the information that's being fed into the stream and into the agency. A lot of policy changes and a lot of rule changes with ODA and ODM, and just trying to dissect and understand impact on the program, and also even downstream from there. That was a learning curve for me, as I was starting to wrap my brain of how this impacts the assessment team, but recognize that since I'm in the rules, I need to also think how it impacts further downstream to care management and things like that, and pass along when I can. Now, obviously, they manage themselves more than competently, so it's not a huge issue, but I just didn't see the world that big at that when I first came on board. So outside of that, then it becomes an issue of just assessing and helping out the team, trying to build the culture that that I think is appropriate for us as an agency. So I spend a lot of energy on the floor, mm-hmm. walking around, talking to people, which is challenging with the assessor since I send them out into the world all the time. But
you see us once a month.
I do.
Pretty much.
I do.
You're out and about that much?
Yeah.
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 They are. They're out and about. And when they do come in, it's to gather paperwork, to check off something or drop something off. Yeah. And it's really an in and out.
Okay.
So I get to catch them on meeting days.
That's an interesting point around keeping up with the ever-changing, it seems, policies and procedures of ODM or ODA, and how you're sort of taking in all of that information, communicating it out as something might change so that when you're out in the community, Anya, you know whatever it might be. But then the other side of the house of our case management, sometimes that can be affected too. So really working mm-hmm. on that cross-department communication to make sure everyone is lockstep with all of these changes as they come out. Yeah. Yeah, that is a different view. It's like one of those things you know kind of operates in the background, and mm-hmm. then when you're in charge of it, you're like, oh my, this is quite a bit of information.
I was sent as the delegate to a pretty significant meeting and managed to pass along the information only to one group. And then an email came out about a month later on a policy change, and it was like, did anybody know about this? I'm like, yes, I did.
I think I did.
I just chose to keep it to myself. So. So a little bit of a learning curve. And they're obviously the program it's a beautiful agency, and they've been more than gracious in allowing me to make those mistakes as we go.
I can echo that because I too am making all kinds of mistakes like that. There really is so much mm-hmm. to take in all the time. So I feel you. My first couple months here, I kept saying, like, am I in charge of that too? Am I supposed to read these as well? We got 7 notices on Tuesday. Do I need to know everything? And it's like, yeah, you do. Now, luckily, we have a lot of cross training and backup, but
yeah.
Mm-hmm, yeah, it's a lot. So I feel you. Okay, one of my favorite things also is to know or have you guys share like one of your favorite stories or a success story. So take a second and think about that. But would love to hear from both of you about one of your kind of favorite or success stories.
When you travel a lot in assessment, you're just thinking like, how can I help the next person, or how can it look successful for them, like making sure that their needs are met? Because like I said earlier, a lot of people don't meet our criteria for passport, and so you still want to meet their needs in some type of way.
Okay. Maybe it's not that there's one episode or one story that necessarily sticks out, because your job is about continued success every time you're meeting with someone.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what I was going to say. Most of this job, so we do long-term care consultations too in passport assessment.
What do those look like?
And so basically, I always say that in assessment, you have to be a walking thesaurus of all like long-term care services. Like you have to know everything about anything to answer these families' questions. Mm-hmm. And it's just us. It's just you and the family. So sometimes you can be sitting there with like 5 family members and they're all just like a round table and they're just asking you questions. And most of our assessments are kind of designed to be a consultation in some way.
Okay.
You want to know, one, we're doing level of care. So are they getting assistance with their ADLs, or are they still independent? And then, you know, a lot of people don't think it's a big deal, but it's a big deal if an older adult can't take out their trash, you know?
It is.
And mm-hmm. so we go through the COAAA resource guide together and just go over resources with them. And I think that's my success, because I do it probably every other day if someone doesn't meet criteria. And we're just going through the resource guide. Okay. And that's what I do for their assessment of just, you know, here's some resources that can help you. And they just feel, I don't know the correct word, seen in a way, or
sure. Yeah.
You know, they're like, oh, I never knew this existed. And I was like, well, here you go. It's right here. Here's their number. Give them a call. And I think that's the successful part. And just, it's really a type of advising that you do with these older adults who just want to know what's available to them pretty much.
Yeah. And I would say, I mean, I think that's a great answer. It's not one success story that sticks out. It's because it's your continual dedication and work in the community to help individuals navigate this very fragmented, complicated system. And so just one point of clarification. So sometimes you're assigned to go out and do passport assessments, but other times you're assigned to go out and do long-term care consultations, which means essentially we know up front they're not qualifying or trying to qualify for passport or MyCare for that matter, but more along the lines of I need to understand what's available in the community.
Yeah,
is that right?
Exactly that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Tim, how about you? And it can be from any of your, you know, experiences at COAAA. It doesn't have to be in your current role.
Well, I would like to boast on Anya then, since she was going around things. She may not be able to see how many times she actually crossed the finish line on some great accomplishments, but from our perspective, she has actually stepped up multiple times, asked her for extra tasks. Even the simple privilege of having her come in today, she was able to just coordinate her schedule, and she's always just been available for the team as a whole. So if
Thank
I could
you.
Boast
Thank
on
you.
That for a second.
Yes, I love that.
For me, I would say my biggest accomplishment is just the fact that there's some great people around me, and I can take a little bit of credit for that. But I think at best I'm freeing them up to be the great people that they are at best. The enrollment team is one of those places as far as the assessment side is concerned that I feel very proud about. I know that the wheels were put in place before I got there. But one of the pieces that was a little bit of a hiccup was the fact that it was the enrollment team and the assessment team, and they were siloed. And then you had the care management team, and that was siloed. And I've made ardent efforts to try to remove some of those silos and allow us some overlap with each other.
That's great.
And I'm starting to see the fruit of that. And that's pretty exciting to see that it's the assessors and the enrollment team working together, identifying stress points, and each one of them moving back and forth, trying to help out where those stress points are, and just trying to break down those barriers and that mindset. I don't know if it's a barrier. It was a mindset.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're starting to see it. And it's fun that the enrollment team is now fully staffed, and they're starting to really be seen as a help. And talking to them even this morning, I was like, see, now we're getting to the exciting part, because now we're hitting the numbers. Mm-hmm. And now we actually get to move to the creative part where we can say, what other value do I get to bring to the table to help? And it was fun to hear a couple on the enrollment team just start to get excited about that, because it's sort of what excites me.
Yeah, I can tell your whole body just lights up and you're smiling. And yeah. I think when you know, you were in the process of interviewing for this, part of what you're known for is really that leadership and pulling a team together and getting everyone goal oriented. The tricky part when you come into a new role is it's hard to both learn and lead at the same time, right? Mm-hmm. And so that takes a minute. And when your like foundation to who you are is being a leader, but you know you can't quite get there yet because you have a lot to learn, that takes some time. So I love that you're seeing it all kind of congeal and feeling like you're you know, settling into it. So that's great.
It is exciting. I thank you for those gracious words. Truly, there was the onboarding side, and I do want to tip my hat to Linda.
Absolutely.
She's been a joy, and
she's a pillar of the agency.
Oh my goodness! Yes. Oh my goodness! And I attempted for. It's funny. My attitude is to help other people build a team. But in my mind, I approached Linda for too long with the concept of let me take things off of her plate and help her, where I really just needed to soak up the knowledge because of how much onboarding there is, much new information. And she really just, I mean, she just has it. I mean, it's just in her mind. I mean, it's in her hair. I mean, she understands policy and
she does
all that.
Yeah.
So that is a little bit of a regret, actually, if I could say that, is instead of soaking in the information from her. I tried to take it from her and learn it myself when I think I could have done a better job at that point.
Well, and it's a really difficult position, too. I mean, again, you're talking about someone with 35 years of experience and expertise and trying to come in. And I know I keep drawing parallels between us, but I think it's a similar nuance of like wanting to be helpful first. And it's hard to be like, well, I don't know anything, actually. So I just need to like learn first and then eventually be helpful. But yeah, and I think so many people in the agency are like that too. You know, we're a lot of empaths and natural born leaders and people that are dedicated to the community. And so we naturally all want to be helping, whether it's consumers or each other or teammates. Yeah, we've got some good folks here. Yeah. So
we're all going to cry in a couple months with Linda.
I know. 35 years.
Yeah.
So, okay, as we wrap things up, any final thoughts or things that you want listeners to know about the assessment process or the assessment team?
The thing that I would want to say, and I think this actually applies agency-wide, and it's probably one of the things that has helped me manage, is I have an ability natural to just see the strengths that exist around us. And it's not just the hiccups in the system that I get stuck on. And it is absolutely astounding the amount of work we do within the community. The fact that, I mean, we have so many consumers that we have in our care, and we get so easily caught up by that phone call or by that overload of documentation or that consumer that took 3 hours on what should have been a 15-minute visit. And we get caught up on the things that don't fit, where what really does fit is the fact that 95% of the consumers are happy and grateful for the role that we get to contribute, for the assessment team gets to contribute. And they get to live in dignity with their choices intact, mm-hmm. and we got to play a part in
protecting that.
Yes. Yeah. I think if anything, it's just recognize we do great work.
Yeah.
Under not always easy circumstances with, I mean, there's a lot of reasons we could add to that.
Yeah.
But if economy, I could say anything.
Yeah. The economy of scale around what we all do and how it's easy to lose sight when you're having a bad day. But if you pull back and think about, on average, 650 assessments a week, at any given time, case managing over 12,000 individuals across the region, fielding 4,000 calls a month, right? Like the enormity of mm-hmm. what we do is so huge. That's a good reframe around. Yeah. Yes, maybe the 5% are outliers and challenging and we're having frustrating days, but for the most part, we're the foundation in the community for these services.
Yes.
Yeah. I like that when he said not focusing on the hiccups. Like we said, our referral system is complicated, to say the least. Anyone can call in to see what services are available for older adults in the community. And I think us and our assessment team, that includes my care, we get stuck on the hiccups until we actually talk to the consumer and then they say, oh, I never knew this existed. Mm-hmm. And then it makes us happy. I think it's that tug and a pull with that one is we get stuck on the hiccups, but then we're like, oh, this is why I became a nurse. This is why I became a social worker. And I think that's just wonderful.
Yeah. And I think it's easy to get stuck on the hiccups when we all want to make sure we're doing a really good job. Mm-hmm. And so when doing a good job is difficult or impossible, sometimes that would be a challenge. But yeah, we kind of persevere and get through it and then hopefully rely on all of their team members as we get closer and closer to push through those hard times. Thank you both so much for being here. I learned so much. As always. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
I hope now you know something about the assessment team.